Well, on Mother's Day and Father's Day, since I've been with the fellowship, we've had School of Ministry students or fellowshipians share their experiences of their mothers and fathers. And from my perspective, it's always been a wonderful, wonderful experience. We've laughed together and we've cried together, but we always leave having healed ourselves in some form or fashion and with a heart that is so full of love for each other and for ourselves and for our families and for our mothers. It's just been a wonderful experience, and I want to thank everyone who has volunteered to do these talks over the years and share really from the depth of their heart and sometimes their most vulnerable stories about their lives with their parents. As you all know, there are so many, too many to even try to explain, types of experiences that we have with our mothers and our fathers, and their complicated relationships. And so I think we all know from our work here with the fellowship that whatever the experience, it's an opportunity to love, and I really appreciated your song that you sang, Quartet, because it's our decision to love, and we always have the opportunity to extend our hearts in love, whatever the situation. And they usually aren't always the same all along, right? There's ups and downs as we grow together. I heard a wonderful song not too long ago that said something like, as we grow older together, our families and our parents together, we have better relationships oftentimes toward the end of our lives because a lot of the falseness has fallen away over the years. And I love that idea that we all are growing and learning about how to get along with each other and love each other the best way that we can. So tonight, our two speakers who have volunteered to share from their hearts are Julia Frege and Deb Plichta. And Julia will go first this evening, so let's give her a warm welcome.
Actually, I didn't volunteer. Mary asked me a few weeks ago, and I said no. And then I started thinking about it. I thought, yeah, I can do this. And I'm really glad that I am doing it because for the past 3 weeks, I've been jotting down little things, little memories of my childhood, and it's been a very, very, very wonderful experience. Those of you who have been to my house, I have a big back window that looks out into the woods. And there's a serviceberry bush growing there near my condo. Every spring, its buds sprout little white flowers. I planted it 9 years ago in honor of my mom when she passed away at the age of 83. I had great hopes for this tree, but it was planted near too many trees that cast shade on it most of the year. So the tree has stayed small and compact, just like my mother, who stood at 5 feet tall most of her adult life. But size never limited her influence on family and community. She packed a lot of love and generosity into her small frame. And like my mom, this scrappy little tree has withstood many challenges in its short life. Adele Shaheen was born in Indianapolis in 1925, the oldest of three daughters to Syrian and Lebanese immigrant parents. By the way, she's no relation to Shaheen Chevrolet here in Lansing. It's a common Syrian name, which means raven. Other than being of the same ethnicity, Mom was soon joined by two younger sisters, and all three were adored by their parents and extended family, immigrants all who settled in Indianapolis and Canton, Ohio, in the early part of the last century. Sadly, though, their mom died at a young age of 39 after struggling with breast cancer, leaving my mother and her two sisters to be raised by their grieving father and many extended family members. It was not an easy childhood for them. After high school, though, in college, Mom earned a teaching degree and married my dad, who wasn't her first love. She met a young man in college and was serious about him, but was strongly urged by her family to marry a man of her same ethnic and cultural heritage. She met my dad, Rick Frege, at a Syrian Orthodox youth convention. He was also the son of Syrian and Lebanese immigrants. Other than being of the same ethnicity, though, no two people were more different in personality and values and spiritual beliefs. Whereas my mother was quiet, honest, and devoted to her children, my father had a personality that could fill a room but was addicted to gambling, following in his father's footsteps. As with many addictions, honesty was inconvenient for my dad, and my family was secondary. Sadly, I realize now my parents were a terrible mismatch. After marriage, my mom taught elementary school for a couple of years, and then I was born, followed by my three brothers at two-year intervals. At one point, she was raising four of us, all under the age of six. Notice I said she was raising us. She did this mostly alone, for my dad was busy with his catering business and spent his free time at the poker table or racetrack. My brothers and I grew up in the Indianapolis suburbs, which were becoming prevalent in the 1950s with baby boomers bursting into mid-century. We were surrounded by families residing in three-bedroom homes with anywhere from three to six children. And I'm sure at any given moment in time, you would see a pregnant mother walking the block searching out a wayward child who forgot to come home for supper. This was back in a more innocent time when children, dogs, and other pets were free to roam the area as long as we returned home for meals and for bedtime. Cooking, housekeeping, gardening, sewing, all the qualities that would describe the duties of a wife back then did not interest my mother. When not trying to keep track of her four children, she became very active in the neighborhood Moravian Church, a moderate Protestant welcoming congregation. There she sought spiritual and social support. She was active in many church functions, including Bible study, prayer groups, and becoming a Sunday school teacher. And of course, she made damn sure her children attended Sunday school, church, and the many youth functions, such as summer vacation Bible school, youth group, holiday programs, and church camp. Actually, the church became an extended arm of our family. Not only did it become a social outlet for my mother, but a safe haven for her children, who struggled with their parents' perpetual fights, usually starting because my father avoided home responsibilities, which, of course, did not sit well with my mom. My dad was not a churchgoer, but the few times he did attend church, he usually fell asleep during the sermon. His loud snoring, entertainment for us all, I'm sure, but I'm sure my mom did not appreciate this. Mom instilled a love of books and reading from as far back as I can remember. There weren't that many children's books available during my preschool years, but she made sure we were always read to, sometimes with one child at her breast, the other on her lap, and another at her knee. During my elementary school years, she would drop us off at our local library, which was across the street from a supermarket. While she shopped, I was to keep track of my brothers, and we spent time in the children's section where I discovered that books were a great form of escape, and I lived vicariously through literary character heroes. Reading is still a passion I enjoy to this day, and thanks to my mom's early encouragement. And growing up, we also had the world according to Mom. As a young child, I still remember her admonishments, and some of these may sound familiar to you too. If you keep crying, your face will freeze that way. If you don't quit losing your mittens, I'm not getting you any more, and your fingers will get so cold they'll pop off. Wash your hands after you go to the bathroom. Why? Because if you don't, you'll get polio. You'd better eat more off your plate or you'll just wither away. With my active imagination, I could just see myself fading away into nothing, a great incentive to eat. But here's the scariest. We were visiting these older women, and one of them had her legs amputated at the knees. I was about 5 years old, and after we left them, I asked my mom why Mrs. Miller didn't have any legs. And without missing a beat, she said, because when she was a little girl about your age, she wouldn't let her mother put iodine on her scraped knees. Well, needless to say, from then on, I never again complained or whined when Mom applied astringents to my cuts and abrasions. She took an active role in all things her children pursued academically. She especially supported my creative endeavors. My parents bought a little spinet piano, and I started taking piano lessons at the age of 6. I wasn't the most dedicated student and sometimes hated practicing. I'd rather have been outside playing. But she would not let me quit, saying, "My mother let me quit, and I've regretted it, so I'm not going to let you quit." Well, I didn't quit and took piano lessons for years. I never was that good, but I still play some today, and I thank her for that. I did enjoy the visual arts and writing, and whenever I created anything, she made me feel like a star, always telling me how talented I was, even when I wasn't. Well, Mom was a star in my book, too, for her generosity towards others. As a child, I remember friends and neighbors sending people to our house who were looking for work, and Mom would somehow create odd jobs for them to do. And she was always the first on our block to take up collections for one thing or another. And neighborhood kids were always welcome to come and play baseball in our front yard, even if it meant stomped down grass and a broken window now and then. Mom and I were not close emotionally. I feel it's because she and her sisters lost their mother at such a young age. This loss couldn't have been easy for their emotional growth. I never felt like I could go to her with any problems, probably because I knew she had her own burdens with my father. He somehow was able to support us financially, but never did fit into the dedicated husband and father role. We could always depend on him to be undependable. He would commit to something and then would never show up. Most of my memories of their relationship is that they were always struggling with each other, which they did not hide from us children. When I was in college in the early 70s, my mother and youngest brother, who was about 16, attended a church rally with our cousin, and they became born-again Christians. Needless to say, this was a big change for my formerly liberal, open-minded mother. She now felt the need to step up her spirituality as a born-again Christian. You see, being a Christian was not enough anymore as far as she was concerned. You had to be born again and washed in the blood to earn your ticket to heaven, and preferably baptized in a river somewhere. She and my brother now spoke in tongues, and she was quietly bent on saving our souls. She was determined to do this before the approaching rapture came and the world came to an end. Thankfully, I was away at college, and then off to Cincinnati, fully engaged in my first teaching job. When I came home to visit, I missed my old mom. She never overtly tried to win me over to her new religion, but I know she was very concerned for my salvation. But then in the late 70s, one of my brothers died unexpectedly from an unknown heart condition, and she was able to seek great comfort in her newly found faith. After my brother's death, my parents' 29-year-old marriage that hung by a thread dissolved. After their divorce, Dad ended up staying in town and marrying another woman. Mom moved into an attached apartment with my brother, his wife, and their children. Through the next 30 years, we had an unspoken understanding of agreeing to disagree when it came to religious doctrine and cultural and political differences. For years, we respected each other's spiritual boundaries, although I knew she prayed daily for my soul. Once when I went to visit in the early 2000s, she had the Fox News TV channel on and told me she really liked listening to this talk show host on TV. When I looked up, there was Bill O'Reilly on the screen. He had her totally snowed. I think I may have said something like, "Mom, he's a total jerk." Nothing more was said, but she did have one of his books on her coffee table, which I turned face down, and it remained that way my entire visit. In the future, I would joke with her about her new fox boyfriend, and she would just smile. In her late 60s, she was diagnosed with breast cancer. After a lumpectomy and radiation, she was in remission for about 10 years. It then came back and spread to her bones. The doctor said she had 2 to 4 years left. This prompted me to retire from teaching so I could spend more time with her. I traveled to Indianapolis monthly, spending a week or so each visit. My brother, his wife, and I shared in the care of Mom. She survived another 4 years and actually enjoyed a good quality of life up to till about the last few weeks of her life. She and I became closer than we had ever been as our roles reversed, and I encouraged her to follow the doctor's orders, which involved taking her meds and keeping monthly doctor appointments. She rejected these demands on her life, fully expecting a miracle healing from God. But she acquiesced when I was there and dutifully took her meds and kept doctor appointments. Well, there was a healing, but not one either of us had expected. I tried to spend as much time as I could with her. Throughout the next 4 years, we grew closer and closer as we settled into our routine time together. After breakfast, we'd venture out and do some light shopping and enjoy lunch at one of her favorite restaurants. Many times her friends would join us. Mom never liked to cook, so she was impressed with the fact that I took pleasure in preparing the evening meals for her and the rest of the family. After dinner, Mom and I would talk, watch TV, or I would read to her. I felt a new close intimacy just being with her. She became very undemanding, and she was so appreciative of just my being there. And once again, she made me feel like a star. At the end of the day, I would clean up her living space where her reading materials had accumulated, newspapers, magazines, and the Christian broadcasting solicitations, asking for contributions, which she faithfully sent to them. This used to bother me until I realized these broadcasts and the small tithes she would send to these ministries were a comfort to her during her challenging times. Mom's life slowed down considerably during her last couple of weeks with us. She slept more and more, and with the help of in-home hospice, we were able to keep her comfortable and accept that she was making her transition, which she did peacefully one Saturday night almost 9 years ago. It was not a sad parting. She was ready to go, and we all reluctantly knew it was time. And with her leaving, through the years, the difficult memories have gradually been weeded out, and so many joyful ones remain. We all realize that mother-child relationships are complicated, and perhaps we spend our lives trying to figure them out. I think for myself, now just trying to accept it all, the bad with the good has contributed to who I am today, and I thank Mom for this. I appreciate you in so many priceless ways, Mom, ways that will live on in my heart forever. Thank you.
Hello. I gave a lot of thought on how I wanted to do my Mother's Day presentation to you, and I could have done it the same way that I did my father's. We had just gotten through reading The Course in Miracles, and I realized that everything is an illusion and that my parents, I was learning to live life through my parents' perspective, and I learned that a lot of my problems probably were a result of that, and I gave forgiveness to my parents, and you know the rest of the story. But I chose not to go that route with my mom. You see, my dad passed not long ago, and I realized, you know, I don't really need to talk about those kinds of things about my mom. So my presentation is a little different this evening, and it's actually a study of motherhood. My Mother's Day talk has three parts to it. The history behind the history behind Mother's Day and my interpretation of what that is, the reasons why I believe Mother's Day is not just for mothers. I was curious as to the history of Mother's Day and found out that Ann Jarvis invented Mother's Day during the American Civil War as a way to honor mothers. Those years were 1861 through 1865. She organized the work of women and recognized the work of women and the significance of women and the testimony they could give for the need for peace. During the Civil War, she organized women's clubs to serve suffering women and children and encouraged women to come together in their locations to serve the needs that they could see. She was convinced that women, especially mothers, had to work for peace because they could see the ravages of war in their husbands and sons in a way that was so focused and clear that their voices would be powerful. Her movement to bring recognition to mothers got so much attention that in 1912, Woodrow Wilson signed into law a bill setting the second day of Sunday in May as Mother's Day. I have concluded that what Ann Jarvis was witnessing in these women was an expression of love. They were women caring for and protecting their homes and families during the Civil War. They were women witnessing death of family and friends. They were witnessing their families being torn apart by war. They were women who got their voices loud and became strong on a united front. They were committed to peace. They were reflecting the image of God. They were thinking and acting from their heart space. A Course in Miracles teaches us that when you meet anyone, remember it is a holy encounter. As you see him, you will see yourself. As you treat him, you will treat yourself. As you think of him, you will think of yourself. Never forget this, for in him you will find yourself or lose yourself. We are reminded that the love of God is not outside us, and that the face of Christ is the innocence and love behind each mask that we all wear. And seeing that face, touching it, and loving it in ourselves and in others is an expression of God. In his book, The Maternal Face of God, Richard Rohr talks about the mother face of God as seeing the image of God as a compassionate mother, as seeing God as love. I believe that Anne saw the compassion and love of God in and through these women. Father Rohr states in The Emergence of a Feminine Mind that in many ancient writings of the saints and of the mystics, we find ways to appreciate and love the feminine face of God. For many Christians, Mary is the image of the maternal face of God. I have always been memorized by the stained glass windows of Mother Mary holding Jesus, Jesus pointing to his sacred heart, Mary pointing to her immaculate heart. I find myself standing by these windows and gazing, and they become a form of memorization, memorizing for me, and transformation occurs. The artistic depiction of mother-child love is at its finest in these stained glass windows. My Mother's Day talk wishes you all good wishes tonight, not just those of you who are mothers, for you see, I'm not a mother. I made a decision to not be a mother. I consciously made a decision to not be a mother, so I am not a mother. I have not experienced motherhood, only except with my pets and all of the ways that I am a mother to people in my world. I'm a mother to a lot of people in my world through the compassion that I show, the love in my heart, and the support and my striving also for peace in the world. So you see, for me, Mother's Day has always been a hard day. I give thanks to my mother. I give thanks to my grandmother and all the female roles that have played a strong role in my life. But I've always felt a little left out, because the qualities that we've just mentioned here in these women are very similar to what I have inside myself. So you see, Mother's Day is not as, it's a different interpretation for me, and that's why I'd like to always extend it to everyone, all women, and I'd like to even include men in there, because we really all are childs of God, and our mother is the Mother God. Thank you.